heartbeat. We eat the fruit of the earth. That is absorbed and transformed in our bodies into blood. And our hearts send this blood, the earth transformed, to every particle of our bodies to give us strength. Give us the energy to do what we have come to do. Become aware of the blood flowing through you, the earth transformed so she may feed you. As you came to serve, feel your heart. This is the sound that you heard in your mother's belly. Ancestors, to your roots, to the earth. Listen to your heartbeat. Feel your heartbeat. Circle. As we form circles and webs of intention, our hearts beat together. Our hearts take the rhythm, the heartbeat of the planet. We are one organism. Listen, listen to my heart song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. I will never forget you. I will never forsake you. Listen to my heart song. put soup on.
Is that what's...
Yeah, you might want to
turn it down.
Yeah.
Would you like the light on?
Sure.
Thank you.
So, we're talking about the fire element and the southern gate of the medicine wheel. And here's Lana. And a big part of what we've been talking about is open-heartedness and everything that stands in the way of open-heartedness. And we began talking about passion. And about the lower heart and the higher heart. Kate, did you do any reflecting on the lower and the higher heart? Hi. And Lana, did you do any reflecting on the lower and the higher heart?
People are coming late and have to answer the homework
questions. That's because you were the only ones who were here last time.
Yeah.
She was here.
Yeah, well, I didn't do that.
Yeah. Somehow my week thwarted me from answering those questions. How coincidental.
The fire element is a dual element. It's different from all the others in that there's two aspects to it. Reflective of the fact that fire is dual in nature. It's light and heat, in the same way as the human being is spirit and matter. And we spoke of how many people say that they're moving and working and acting and speaking from their hearts when they're actually talking about the wounded aspects of themselves, the wounded heart. And that's what I was referring to as the lower heart. The wounded aspects of ourselves is what creates our passion. This is very important because it's something that people don't catch very often, is that our wounding determines our passion. Passion is simply an unavoidable, inevitable pulling towards what gives us the feeling of being whole. What brings us to that feeling of oneness. And so, our wounding is where we have our holes. It's where we feel, where we've learned that we're missing something. And therefore, our passion is very clearly connected to the wounds that we have. We will be irrevocably pulled to people and careers and situations and foods and whatever it might be that will give us the sensation of the holes being plugged up. And it's important to underline here that these are illusory holes. These are things that we learned about ourselves. Are we looking for pens here?
So our passions are also our ideals.
Yes, our passions and our ideals are very much intermeshed also. Exactly. Because we form our ideal world based on usually the opposite of what hurt us when we were little. So we have, if we lived in justice, we're going to fight for justice. If we lived being abandoned by our parents, we're going to do our best to make sure that children of the world are not abandoned. So that our ideal worlds and our what we hold as
which links to the wounding, and then which is the oneness.
Exactly.
See, I did think about it.
You did think about it. But let me just repeat it for the others. Well, this is part of the problem of The Secret, huh? And the movie and the book. Part of the problem with that is that our ideals, what we believe that we are working towards, is created out of opposition to what we actually lived. And so there's this pushing against something. And a creation of an ideal out of fear and rejection of what we actually lived. And whatever is created out of fear and denial and rejection is going to crumble at some point. And so we need to honor the program. We need to honor what we learned. The main, the image that comes is the hardening of the heart. We learn very clearly from our families and from our societies and our cultures. We learn very clearly who to not let in. We have a fence built around our hearts, and that fence is created of judgment. And that fence was created to keep us safe in the eyes of our parents and our ancestors, so that we would be nice and safe inside with everyone else like us. The good, the clean, the pious. And on the outside is the rest of the world. And each of the judgments that we've placed around ourselves, that we've learned to have around ourselves, and we maintain, and we put a lot of energy in maintaining this fence around us and the world. Each of the judgments is a reflection of the fears of our parents and of our ancestors. This wall around our hearts, created by judgments, is an indication of the fears of our parents. What we were programmed with by our parents was their ways of surviving. What they learned that they needed to survive. And that entailed keeping away from us, keeping away from them and us, all situations, people, all aspects of life that were threatening. When we begin to observe our judgments, as Monique was saying, it can be really mind-boggling because we have judgments for every second of our lives. And this teaches us how deep the program is, how deeply we are programmed. Program that we were all taught was taught so that it would not be conscious. The point of what we were programmed with from 0 to 5 years old was so that we would not ever have to think about it again. As I said last time, in the same way as the military is trained, going over and over the same exercises so that when they're in a dangerous situation, they just react. They don't think, they just act, right? We are programmed in exactly that way so that we will never have to think about what to do in a dangerous situation again. We just act. And then we believe that that is who we are. But it's not. Anything that is not love is not who we are. Anything that is not love is not who you are. It is only what you learn. And when I say it's only what you learned, I don't mean to diminish it, because we are here in these bodies with the incredible opportunity now to become aware of our programs, to become aware of all of the learning about separation and duality that's been bequeathed to us through our families, through our ancestors, through our lineages. We have this amazing opportunity now to become self-aware. And in so doing, to release our bodies of all of the programs. To release our DNA from the prison that it's been constructed from. As we release the need to survive and the fear of death, as we release the fear of life, we can take out the judgments one by one, all around our hearts. and we can experience the open-hearted oneness that allows us to become who we are. And life doesn't look at all the same. And so when I say that our passion and our ideals are a result of our wounding, I'm not judging the wounding. No? The wounding is what we're here for. Why we're here in these bodies. We've chosen these bodies with exactly the right programming for the needs of our souls. Exactly the right. Wounding. Right amount of suffering. We have suffering tailored to the needs of our souls.
Custom.
Custom made. Yes. Bespoke suffering. And so when we can, when we can define what we really feel passionate about, it's a question then of looking at that and understanding where that passion comes from, the holes that are being plugged by that drawing of ourselves outward into an experience. We spoke last time about how passion is perceived to be very dangerous because it rocks boats. It creates chaos. It stirs things up. It makes us do things that we would not logically do. But it will always bring us, whether it's dangerous or not, it brings us to an experience of oneness. And I hesitate there because we don't always have to act on our passions. No? There's that chemical passion, right? The fizz. That fizziness, right? That comes up your body. And the radar goes like this, and you go, ooh, that's nice. But that chemical passion is an indication that the person that you're getting the fizziness about has got the perfect wounding to match your wounding. Does not mean that you're going to jump on the white horse and gallop off into the sunset and live happily ever after. It means that this is the perfect person to roll up your sleeves with and work. That this person is going to bring up all of the stuff that hasn't been seen and that needs to be seen for you to be able to feel this sensation of being whole. What do you think about the idea of a twin flame? Do you know what I'm talking about when I talk about the twin flame?
Soulmate.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that idea?
Almost like another aspect of ourself that maybe did not incarnate, or if it has, it's there. Okay. Maybe the mm-hmm. yin and the yang.
It's kind of like a myth. Like it's
a myth.
A lot, like the idea that my soulmate is out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It really pushes us to is that could that really be mm-hmm. true?
Mm-hmm. Does anybody know where that whole idea came from? This twin flame, the soulmate. It's extremely present.
Mm-hmm.
In
I think
Christian culture,
yes.
Jewish culture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it came from.
That represent male, female symbol?
Well, the idea is that at the beginning of creation of the world, that the one soul of each of us was split into two, and these two parts were sent off through incarnations. And when each half has lived enough incarnations to come to a certain... The idea that's current right now is that when we have earned it, right, when we've come to a place of being able to love ourselves and when we've attained a certain
mm-hmm.
level of spiritual...
Awakening.
Awakening, that's a good word, that we will then attract our soulmate. To ourselves, right? That we will then reunite and become whole. And this is something that's extremely, extremely common, extremely courant, whatever that word is. I don't know how to say it. It's not common, that's not the word. Courant is, you hear it a lot. And even there's huge gatherings of people who get together to pray and call in their soulmates.
This like longing to be whole in a much deeper sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
I have read somewhere that in Greek mythology,
yes,
when the gods created man, men became very proud and powerful and started challenging the gods. So they have decided to split man in two so that he spends the rest of his life looking for his other half in order to achieve oneness.
Mm-hmm. Keep busy.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that I've heard is that as Lemurians, well, and when we first inhabited the planet, that we were not so dense, and that we were very much much more of a subtle energy and entire of ourselves, and that because of this completion, we were not engaging so much in the planet, and that it was a conscious choice to split into male and female, so that so there would be this sense of unfinished business.
A further stage in the devolution process. Yeah.
This is, if you want, this is the fall from the Garden of Eden, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. fall into duality.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah. The fall of man, right?
No, they say it's the fall of man. Women didn't fall. they've been dragged.
And tikkun olam, the healing. The healing of the planet is not only seen as being the uniting with your soulmate, twin flame, other half. It's also the healing of all duality. And so it seems to me that this idea of the soulmate or the twin flame is a very potent and ubiquitous. It's something that we can all feel. This aching to be one, to be whole, and we project that onto another person. Whereas duality is aching to be healed. It's our perception of the world that is aching to be healed. It's the illusion of duality. I feel that projecting all of that aching on one person, on the potential for meeting that one person who's going to complete you, has caused a lot of problems. And has made a lot of economic wheels turn around. So that there has been a huge accentuating of this feeling of being not whole, right? You don't, if you're trying to sell people on all of the things that you can do, that you can buy to make yourself attractive to that one person who's out there. Right? Mm. We are not invested economically in being whole and complete.
The whole system functions off of that.
That's right. The entire, all systems function off of that. Yeah. Many parents will say, really and really believe that it would be a mistake teaching their children that they are perfect as they are. That, what kind of parent would I be mm-hmm. if I didn't instill a sense of striving? Mm. I mean, I want them to be prepared for the job market. I want them to be able to do things that they don't want to do. I want them to be able to have jobs that they don't necessarily like. I mean, this is important. They have to survive. And then we get back to survival. No? That our parents taught us what they believed was important for our survival. So they taught us their techniques for survival. That is what we are programmed with. Our parents' survival techniques. And their survival techniques have been carefully woven and honed and created and refined throughout the generations. Each one of us is an amazing work. But the idea that we are not complete in ourselves, mm-hmm, keeps us always looking outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And is profoundly ingrained in us. I mean, it's easy to say, you have to love yourself before you can be loved by anybody else. Yeah, yeah. But loving yourself is not just lighting candles and taking a nice bath of bubbles. Loving ourselves entails going into all of the yucky program stuff and seeing it and honoring it and knowing that this is what you're here for. So it's not the cheerleader, you know, I'm great, I'm wonderful, you know, the affirmations on the fridge and on the mirrors. Right. It's, hi Maggie. It's really about going into all of the things that you learned about yourselves, all of the wounding, all of the hurt, and knowing that it's not yours. This is not who you are. This is what you came here to work with, but it's not who you are. Maybe it's true that there's a twin flame out there somewhere for each one of us. Maybe it's true. The danger is in making that the focus. The danger is in working to make sure we're spiritual enough to attract the right person, right? It's that, because that also comes from a feeling of being not enough. That is not loving yourself. And as the fence around the heart is removed bit by bit, the experience of oneness that that brings makes the whole world your lover. It makes things very complicated in terms of society. But the whole world becomes your lover. And each breath is like making love. Feeling the air caress your skin. When we're in this state of no judgment, then all of the siddhis come out. The gifts of connectedness that we each have. She always snores at just the right time. Right when I'm getting too serious. This gift of connectedness that we have, that we experience in different ways depending on who we are, depending on the bodies and the souls that we are. Some of us will connect to oneness through images, others through sounds, through sensation. But this connecting to oneness and being in a state of non-judgment brings you to a place that has been called detachment. Detachment is simply no longer having to go anywhere else than exactly where you are to feel oneness and wholeness.
Can you say that one more time? Detachment
is not needing to be anywhere else other than exactly where you are. Not needing anything else other than what is. No calling towards and no moving away from anything. Place of no judgment, there are no needs and desires. And even the physical body has very different needs than what we believe we need. What do you think about breatharians? Do you think about that? Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. People who exist simply on their breath. They don't eat, they don't drink, they just breathe.
I think there's somebody who does that and teaches that somewhere near Drummondville. Well, some of the saints have existed on just the host.
Just communion.
There is, it's one and primary form of prana. And if one is in the state of being able to use that prana, be perhaps all sustaining. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean by breathing. Feeds you with everything that it can feed you with everything you need. And yet we certainly don't believe that.
Well, we accept breath or death.
But we think we need a whole lot more than that, right?
Yeah.
So, fire element. The heart. Small intestine. Remember? The triple heater and the heart governor. A material anatomical pair of organs and meridians, and a more energetic pair. Energy systems. But they're both related to how we interact with the world. Our ability to receive and to give. Anyone want to talk to me about unconditional receiving?
Yeah, right. It's difficult to receive it all.
Yeah.
Receive everything.
We hear so much about unconditional giving. And we hear so much about unconditional giving that we walk around like this. When we hear about people being wonderful, just great people, they're people who give a lot, right? They're always people who give and who do and who perform and who accomplish, right? We don't hear about people receiving unconditionally as being great people. And yet, when we walk around like this, we are never giving unconditionally. We're always giving so that we can know that we're good people, that we deserve whatever. Unconditional giving cannot exist unless we are receiving unconditionally. And receiving unconditionally means opening up your whole feminine side, means accepting life exactly as it is, and saying, oh, it's a gift. Thank you. When we're able to receive life exactly as it is, our hearts fill and open with gratitude. And we just go, pomp, just like any plant that's fed from its roots and blossoms. And so this whole movement that is so present right now in honoring the feminine, the rising of the goddess, the honoring of Gaia, all of this, as long as it's external to us, it means bubkus. It doesn't mean anything unless we implement it in our own lives and in our own bodies. The application in our lives is one of receiving as open-heartedly as we can. The first thing that we need to do is observe our filters. All of the things that we filter out because of the judgments. Because of that nice little playpen that our parents have put around us, our ancestors have put around us. Our judgments are the filter that stops us from accepting the world as it is, from accepting our lives as they are. With the understanding that whatever we call to us, whatever our reality is a reflection of our wounding. And it's so beautiful when we can clearly see that. Thank you. And the state of gratitude in the heart resonates through the whole body and transforms every cell of your body. Gratitude held in every cell of your being changes you completely. And I don't mean gratitude like I forget how that prayer goes, but you know, I'm a poor, worthless sinner, and I'm so lucky, you know. Oh, yeah. That
awful.
Right? Right? I'm absolutely worthless, and I still, you know, I'm allowed to live, you know, that kind of thing. That's not what I mean, right? That's not gratitude.
Being thankful for the messages that you receive, for the things that you call into.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. No holds barred. Absolutely everything. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Not because, you know, I'm getting so much more than I really deserve. Right? That's not it.
How's your guilt index today?
This whole element is related to the southern gate in the medicine wheel, related to summer. And this makes a whole lot of sense, right? Because in the summer is when we're out there in the world, getting wounded. Rubbing up against everything that we believe about ourselves, right? Experiencing all of the yucky stuff that we think about ourselves, really. creating, eating, consuming life. Right? That's what we're doing in the summertime. Oops, a daisy. Oops. When she first gets up, she's a little unstable. I think she realized that somebody was going in the kitchen to get some food. Now, I think we need to break for a little bit and think about how passion and ego are related. Okay, we're going to take a little break. But I'd like you to think about passion and ego and how those two things are related. Okay? As you go and move your car.
I hope I parked in a pace spot. Wait, right in front. It's all good.